This is episode 66 of Social Entrepreneur with Andrew Stern of the Global Development Incubator.
We think there is no shortage of capital, and we think there are good deals out there that, once vetted, could align with that capital.
Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to episode 66 of Social Entrepreneur with Andrew Stern of Global Development Incubator. You probably know the Apple motto of think different. When I think about Andrew Stern and I think about Global Development Incubator, I think about that motto of thinking differently. So first of all, GDI, or Global Development Incubator, also known as GDI, they are running an incubator for social entrepreneurs, social startups, but also especially for nonprofit startups. And when you think about the process of an incubator for a nonprofit, it's a little different model than maybe you're used to thinking of with Y Combinator or Techstars or others who run these kinds of incubators. So first, they have to think differently about that. And then they have to think differently about how to scale these nonprofits especially. And another area that they think differently in is multi-stakeholder initiatives in which philanthropists and government agencies and private organizations team up to take on some of these sustainable development goals. And one more area, GDI has launched an initiative, and this was really what brought Andrew to my attention, called Convergence, and it's convergence.finance if you're looking for them on the web. And here they used a blended capital approach. And blended capital means the government puts some money in, charity or philanthropic organization puts some money in, and then that de-risks an investment so that private capital can come in and can scale and grow the business. So it's a really interesting conversation. It's a different kind of conversation than I've had in the past. I really enjoyed this. And here he is, Andrew Stern of the Global Development Incubator.
Andrew Stern, the Global Development Incubator. I'm the founder and executive director.
What is the Global Development Incubator?
We're a nonprofit organization that builds startup organizations and launches multi-stakeholder partnerships to create a positive difference in the world.
That's a mouthful.
It is.
Can we pull that apart a little bit? When I think about an incubator, I often think of Y Combinator, Techstars, Fledge up in Washington State. How are you similar or different than those kinds of organizations?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, we are a nonprofit, and we're primarily focused on launching either nonprofit or social enterprise organizations. I think we recognize that there was a need and a space in the market where if you are a startup business, there's many places you could go for seed capital or venture capital. But if you're a nonprofit, if you don't have the right connections or the right sponsors, it's sometimes hard to get a nonprofit started. And secondly, there's many of these multi-stakeholder partnerships that are being launched in development, quite a few being announced now with the Sustainable Development Goals. And we recognize there's often not a good place to launch those. It's a bunch of smart people coming together and trying to find a home to incubate a new idea. And we've tried to be that home for ideas that range from a few years ago, the Aspen Network of Development Entrepreneurs, Andy, to launching new efforts, whether it's in eyeglasses called the Eye Alliance, or for blended finance with an effort called Convergence.
Right. And so I want to get into some of that in a minute, but just one question real quickly. As so do you run these in cohorts and people come in for a period of time and there's some investment and, you know, does it work like that? Or is it more like a fellowship where you're selecting people and you're helping them with finding capital and mentors or et cetera? Or, you know, if I'm a startup in this space, what would I experience within your organization?
Yeah. So, you know, starting with it, if you're a startup in the space, you know, we're trying to identify what we call social agitators. And they could be somebody who wants to launch a social enterprise. They could be someone at a corporation who has a new idea. Or they could be somebody in a government agency. But the common thread of what we're looking for, people are trying to do something a little bit different. We don't run cohorts. We're a little more opportunistic. When we see a new idea or opportunity, whether we generate that ourselves or whether somebody approaches us, we provide basically a space to start that conversation and then a structured process where we go from, as we call it, a growth engineering process from discovery to design the solution. And then we actually build together with the entrepreneurs and the funders, the organization. And then hopefully within 24 to 36 months, we exit it. And it either goes and stands on its own as a new nonprofit organization or finds the right host for it to continue its work.
Excellent. So, Andrew, what was your path? How did you end up doing this kind of work?
Well, I guess there's a long story and a short story. I'll touch on the long story, but focus more on the short story. So the long story is I grew up outside of Boston. I am the son of a tech entrepreneur in the Route 128 area and a mother who I guess nowadays would be called a social entrepreneur who ran everything in town, every social cause and events at the school. And I think I sort of integrated things from both of their experiences, being an entrepreneur from the business side, but also being very aware of social needs and social causes outside of the business world. So that's sort of the beginning. But maybe to jump, after I finished college, I went into management consulting, had the good fortune of joining what at the time was Anderson Consulting and joining a public sector strategy group. Spent 2 to 3 years doing that, advising federal government agencies in the U.S. and the State Department. And then in my last two projects, I did one on the digital divide in India and higher education in West Africa. And for me, it was a bit of an eye-opening on the scope of the need and the scope of the problems, and felt that that was really where I wanted to focus my time for the next few years. So went back to graduate school, did a business and public policy degree. And I think, like many people probably in the early 2000s, appreciated the rigor of a management consulting background, but felt that most of the firms that myself and others would go back to had a hard time working in international development. So myself, as well as many people who graduated at the same time, joined an organization that was just starting called Dahlberg. And that is a management consultancy focused exclusively on international development. And I worked there for 10 years as a partner, together with my colleagues, helped build up the organization from 5 to 10 people to around 300 people around the world. And then 3 years ago, I had stepped out of a global role I was playing and took a step back and wanted to think a little bit more about what energized me in my experience over the last 10 years and also what I may be able to do differently that a consulting firm may have a harder time doing. And the two areas that came out to me, one was being able to help scale the impact of nonprofits and social enterprises that grew out of an experience I had had chairing the board of Mothers to Mothers, which is a HIV/AIDS program focused on preventing mother-to-child transmission. And then the other area, while I was at Dahlberg, we had been funded several times by the Gates Foundation or Rockefeller or USAID or others to launch what we now call multi-stakeholder initiatives, where it was less around client service and more around building and launching a new program. And again, felt that a consulting firm wasn't the right setup for that. We needed a platform that brought more than just strategy consulting. So as you know, an early stage startup needs communications, finance, executive recruiting, ability to tell its story, legal work, and wanted to bring all those together under one platform to be a new home for launching these development ideas. So that's my background, and where I am today as the founder and executive director of GDI.
And when did you launch GDI?
So we had originally launched the Dahlberg Partners. We had originally launched GDI back in 2006 as a nonprofit organization that would be more of Dahlberg's private foundation. Over the years, we had launched one or two programs there, but we realized to really, really let this take off, we needed to push it out a little bit further. So in 2013, we relaunched it as an independent nonprofit.
What's interesting to me about this, as a former business executive, I completely, totally understand the whole startup model, right? And the idea of investable opportunities. And so I'm fairly used to this idea of thinking about how do we grow and scale a profitable organization and create sustainable, profitable growth. And if I'm in this space, it's sustainable, profitable growth to do good, right? Mm-hmm. But when I think about incubating a nonprofit, it's a different kind of thought process that goes into that. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It is a very different process. And, you know, I wish it was one we had more of a rigorous, structured way we approach it. But what we found is every one of these is different. That being said, I think there's a few things that are similar to what you'd see in a for-profit world and are different. So let's start with the obvious ones in terms of what's different. There's no equity. So to get an effort like this going, we usually need some initial seed capital, and we need an entrepreneur who, you know, frankly, is not motivated by the capital, but is motivated because this is their passion and commitment for what they want to be doing in the world. So, come to mind people like Chris Underhill from Basic Needs, who were helping launch a mental health initiative, or Jordan Caslow from Vision Spring, where we're helping launch a movement to put eyeglasses on the billion people around the world who could benefit from them. So these are people, this is their life work. And what we're really focused on is trying to find those people, provide them with initial seed capital, and then provide some structured support. And, you know, in a for-profit business, I think a lot of that beginning work is focused more on developing the right business model and really understanding the customers. There's analogs in the nonprofit world where we're trying to understand the ultimate beneficiaries and what they need and what the impact story is around the work they're doing. And secondly, we are trying to develop what, instead of a business model, what we think of as the end game. And by end game, we mean what is the ultimate pathway to scale of impact that will really make a difference in the world. And in very few circumstances is it building and growing a nonprofit that's going to reach everyone. It's just not feasible with the amount of capital and the type of capital out there. So what we're looking at is how do you get the government to adopt a program? How do you get the commercial sector to take on a new product that may be de-risked? How do you develop an open source or replicable model? So a bunch of different end games that we see as the real engine or the real business model to create scaled impact.
That's very helpful. Thanks for sharing that. So one of the things you mentioned just a second ago I want to circle back to is convergence. So what's GDI's relationship to convergence, and what is convergence, and what are you trying to do there?
Sure. So just to give a snapshot on what convergence is. So convergence is the first platform exclusively for blended finance, which is bringing together public, private, and philanthropic capital to achieve positive development outcomes in the world. And it does it through three different programs. One is an investor and deal network, which allows investors and deals to come together in a more efficient way. Second is a new product design facility, which helps provide the initial funding for a new financial blended finance product. So how do we provide the funding for the next microfinance CDO, collateralized debt obligation, or the next green bond, so that we have scalable products in the blended finance space? And then the third product is what we call market building tools. And, you know, those are the usual knowledge products, but in this case also case studies and a historical database so that people can see comparable transactions that have been done over the last 10 years. So that's what convergence is. What is GDI's relationship? About 2 years ago, Dahlberg and GDI collaborated on a report called Innovative Financing for Development. And at the end, there were three recommendations. And they basically said for blended finance to really take off and to really scale, three things had to happen. One, the market needed to become more efficient because right now is extremely fragmented, or is what people called to us the airplane problem, where somebody would fly to Switzerland, pitch their product, and then the first 5 minutes, the person say, well, we have too much exposure in East Africa. That's not something we focus on. So it's not something that could be easily syndicated like financial products from Wall Street. So how do we build a more consolidated, less fragmented market? The second area was because these products tend to not be as profitable and they often are risky, how do you get that first product designed? As somebody described to me, how do you get the first olive out of the olive jar? And I think of it right now with the development impact bonds, where you have many development impact bonds that have been announced, but very few that have been closed. And the benefit of getting the first 1, 2, 5, or 10 done goes beyond the single health outcome they may create or the single development outcome. It goes into actually starting to build a replicable financial product. And then the last area where we recommended some changes was we said, hey, there's no shortage of financial expertise or structuring in the world. You go to a Citibank or a Deutsche Bank, they can structure anything. But the challenge is this market's never really documented what has worked and what hasn't worked. What are the structures? What are the pricing and the terms in previous financial products? So as you can see, those three barriers ultimately led to the design of convergence. The government of Canada and the World Economic Forum picked up this report. It aligned with some of the other work they were both doing and said, great idea, what can we do about it? And Dahlberg and GDI came back together and worked over the last about 15 months now and designed the initial product and offering, went out and looked at other platforms, went and talked to public, private, and philanthropic investors, and then spent the next 6 months actually building the organization. So developing the legal framework and getting registered or exempted in different jurisdictions, building the team, hiring the CEO, and then ultimately developing the technology platform that undergirds this. And Convergence was formally launched at the World Economic Forum in Davos in January and is now operating with about 40 or 50, as we think of it, at frontier or pioneer investors who are starting to step further into this blended finance space.
So it's interesting you use the word frontier and pioneer sort of closely together there. And I've often thought there's a lot of heroic language around our space, you know, the frontier and the pioneer and all that kind of stuff. But as you think about frontier markets, I often think about, let's say, a smaller market that is developed, but it's sort of, you know, like Estonia is often the example that's given there, or maybe some emerging markets that are larger but not quite as far along. So Kenya or Vietnam might be an example of that. Is that what you're talking about when you're talking about frontier, or are you using that definition of frontier differently here?
Yeah. So let me unpack on the investors. Maybe a more appropriate word would be pioneer, in the sense that we see these investors, whether from the public, private, or philanthropic space, as the people who are leading this effort to look at blended finance in emerging markets or frontier markets. So then what do we mean by frontier markets? I think it is exactly what you're saying there, which is, you know, markets where there are great opportunities, but for a variety of reasons, there is a significant level of risk, whether it's sovereign risk, whether it's industry risk, or otherwise. So the type of finance that goes in there often requires some blending to be able to cover that risk, whether it's credit enhancements or guarantees or different structuring. The way we see it, though, is these investors who are the ones who are getting into these markets are the ones who are starting to build up an expertise and really understand where the next 10, 20, 30 years of growth is going to be coming from.
Yeah. Every time I hear this term pioneer, I think there was a report, and I can't think of the name of it. Acumen and Monitor Group put it together, and it was about like blueprint to impact or something like that.
Right.
But they talked about this pioneer gap where like the needs of the philanthropic money that goes in at the beginning is different than the needs of the capital market that may be coming in on the backside. Now, the good news about philanthropic money or grant money coming in early is it can de-risk an investment. So those who really want to put some capital and get a return on it can help them to – and you mentioned this risk factor earlier. It can help to de-risk this, but – sometimes the needs in the early part are different than the needs in the later part. So do you see that same kind of, dynamic tension? And what do you think about how people overcome that pioneer gap of going from, an early stage philanthropic investment to going into later in other profit-seeking capital?
Yeah. It's a tricky space, and I think I'm mindful that most pioneers around the world didn't fare so well, the first people in a new market. So I'm mindful of that, and I think there is what we've been calling a bit of a social capital chasm, or there is a big gap in the nonprofit and social enterprise space between the early stage seed capital rounds and then the later stage where you'd expect either more structured investment or capital markets to start intervening. And the analogy maybe in the venture world is in the nonprofit and social enterprise space, there's a gap around Series A through D financing. And to me, that's one of the big things this more broadly, the social enterprise sector and development sector needs to figure out, which is a lot of good activity, a lot of density in the startup phase, right? There's schools who are putting out some great talent now. There's funders that come in with some early capital. There's some networks emerging. But I'd say this further along middle market or mezzanine level still has some significant gaps. And I think those gaps go beyond the financing. I think they also involve the CEOs and the type of leadership that can run and grow a significant organization. And there needs to be some work there to provide the support and learning and mentoring that can help scale up and increase the capabilities of a lot of these CEOs who are taking on the organizations. And then on the capital side, I think there is a gap. So, how far a private investor or even a government investor can reach back into something that's de-risked, I don't think they can reach all the way back to where this philanthropic capital is helping to get efforts started. So, Tony, I think there's a big risk right now where there is many great programs, many great businesses around the world that are sort of in this middle chasm. And they've run either on the nonprofit side a good program or on the business side the beginnings of a good customer development and customer market and good business model, but neither of them have the capital or the capability to make that next jump. And I think that's really, really where a lot of the social enterprise field should be focused right now. And convergence is one small step to try to fill that gap.
Right. So what specifically is convergence doing to help to bridge that gap then?
Yeah. So it's doing a couple things, but the main one right now where we see is that we think there is no shortage of capital, and we think there are good deals out there that once vetted could align with that capital. And the problem right now is because we're talking, global markets, new markets all around the world. These markets are not really structured. The networks to allow people, investors and deals to meet or investors to syndicate deals is just too vast. So what we're trying to do with convergence is plug that intermediation gap and be able to take some of these great deals that may have an initial sponsor investor and match them up with other investors who can bring you know, if it's private capital, a significant level of capital to scale, or if it's public or philanthropic capital, an ability to reduce the risk by providing different financial terms or different instruments such as a guarantee. So our hope is once you fill that gap, you start seeing much more activity.
Okay. If I were looking for convergence, I'd look at convergence.finance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Which surprised me. I was really, there's a dot finance? I didn't even know that existed.
I suspect from our communications team that the other more traditional endings were already taken for the word convergence.
Right. So when you think about advice for some of these early stage social entrepreneurs, is there a particular piece of advice that, due to the way that you're sort of moving in this world, is there a particular piece of advice that you would pass along?
Yeah, I usually give people two pieces of advice who are just getting started. First is to get in the field and work on the ground, wherever that may be. If you want to be working in Detroit in the U.S. to do urban development, or you want to work in, you know, Malawi on agriculture with smallholder farmers, you can't sit in New York or D.C. You really got to get out there. And, you know, for me, my experience of spending several months working outside of Cape Town in Khayelitsha and one of the townships there at a HIV/AIDS clinic really opened my eyes to see what works, what motivates people, how people live. And ultimately, that's what needs to anchor, I think, people's work in this development or social enterprise field. So that's my first advice I usually give people. The second one, though, is probably completely counter to that, which is I do think there's tremendous value of getting some business experience and working at a bank or a corporation or in some industry supply chain. And I think that because when we look at social enterprise, when we look at impact investing, I think a lot of the basic skills are similar. It's just more understanding the local context. And I think one of the best ways to get those basic skills, and you know, somebody who's tremendously passionate about social impact may have a hard time doing this, but for a few years, working at an investment bank or working at a GE or at a agricultural supply chain. So those are the two things I usually say. And again, it comes from my experience when we used to do recruiting at Dahlberg, but also now as I'm working at the Global Development Incubator and looking at the type of talent we're looking to bring in and place in some of the organizations we're incubating. It's usually that combination of field experience and some depth in the private sector.
Good. That's good advice. That's solid. As you, if people are looking for you on social media or on the web, where would they look?
Yeah, so our website is, and Tony, this may fit a little with trying to get the right website at the right time. So our website is www.globaldevincubator.org. And that's got all our links to social media. And it's a place where people can see the portfolio of work we're working on.
Good. Very good. We're going to go to a call to action here in a second, a call to action from you to the listeners of Social Entrepreneur. Before we do, Andrew, I just want to take a second and acknowledge you for the work that you're doing. This is really important work, you know, so de-risking, bringing things, you know, market efficiency so that these deals can find each other, global blended funds that bring together philanthropic money and public money and private money. This is all really important work. And I think that given the global challenges that we have, the sustainable development goals and other global challenges, having new capital models is so important. And I just wanted you to know how much I appreciate this work and how important I think it is.
Thank you, Tony. On behalf of everyone at GDI, and yeah, we appreciate that.
Yeah. So a call to action, if there's one call to action for people who have been listening to Social Entrepreneur today, what would that be?
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. I think it picks up on something we talked about a few minutes ago, which is I think the first, you know, I don't know where you begin, say the beginning of the social enterprise field, where it started, but in the first phase, in my view, it's really been around identifying, launching, and building the field, bringing people into the field. And I think people should feel good about where things are. You know, it's popular at business schools, it's popular in corporations. But I think there's some risk of us, you know, frankly, feeling good or being a little self-referential, because the truth is very few of these great ideas are actually getting to the scale of impact that I think all of us want to see. So for me, the big call to action is, I think it's great that people are launching, and I say this as somebody running an incubator, launching great new ideas, but we really need people to dig in and build some of the great programs that are out there. And for me, and this may be a specific call looking at government people in government agencies or in a corporation, I think that hand that's going to pull some of these ideas to really scale and really be commensurate with the size of some of the problems is going to come from the governments and the corporate sector. So for people who can realign their businesses or realign government programs to start supporting these great programs, that to me is the next big phase for us, and I would say the next big call to action for us in this sector.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Andrew.
Great. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If you'd like the show notes for today, you could head over to tonyloyd.com/066. That's TonyLoyd with one L, tonyloyd.com/066. Now listen, while you're there, remember that you can register to win one of 10 mentoring sessions that I'm giving away during the month of April. And to register for that, you can find the link in the show notes, or you can just simply head over to tonyloyd.com/coaching, and that will take you to the entry form. Listen, thanks again for joining us today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.